Okay, good morning to everyone. We're resuming, had off last week, picking up once again with live classes. And today we'll start just momentarily discussing the plague of boils. That's based in Exodus 9, verse 11. And we'll just start momentarily. Morning, Doug. Morning, Cal.
Morning, Rabbi. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank God. How have you been feeling, by the way?
My feeling? Oh, I'm definitely recovering.
Good.
Got about, what, another week and a half or 2 weeks to go, and then I should be pretty much back to normal.
All right, good to hear. Okay, why don't I take up one verse, interesting, just in terms of, again, continuing on the theme of understanding how to, you know, study the verses. So it's about the plague of boils. It's Exodus 9, verse 11. And it's interesting how from the verse itself, Rabbi Chaito has explained that just let the words speak to you. They're written in a way. That's the wisdom of the verse is something that we have to train ourselves to be in line with. That's how we develop, you know, our abilities, how we can enhance and refine and advance our ability to derive even more the next time we study. So the verse says, okay, the verse says, right. It says the astrologers were not able to stand before Moses because of the boils. For there were boils on the astrologers and on all of Egypt. And it really does not say much more about the effects of the boils, whereas other plagues you have a quite lengthy description. So, if this is pretty much what the Torah discusses in terms of the effects of the boils, so I think it's safe to say that this is the objective of the boils, right? I mean, why is God limiting the description of the effects to just this? Evidently, this was what was worthy of being recorded. So you wouldn't say that an accidental result of the boils is going to be noted in the Torah, but the real effect is not. That doesn't make sense to me. Now you tell me, what does the verse mean? Just, you know, the simple explanation.
Well, a simple explanation would be that boils came over everybody, and so they were so painful or uncomfortable that the astrologers were not able to stand up before Moses.
Okay, so what are the problems now in the verse? Right, that would be the way I would read it also. But now let's scrutinize the verse and see if we can detect some problems with it. And it's always more difficult when there's very few words.
Well, there are a couple things that jump out at me. It says the astrologers were not able to stand before Moses. The word stand kind of catches my attention, because I would think, why that particular word, why not appear or be before or whatever? And, okay, you have some boils, so it's obviously uncomfortable, but what prevents you from appearing before Moses with boils? And then the third thing that bothers me is because it says, because there were boils on the astrologers and on all of Egypt. What does the fact that there were boils on all of Egypt have to do with the astrologers standing before Moses? It seems like that last clause doesn't tie into the first part.
Yeah, why not?
I don't have the rest of the context around me.
Right.
Can you read 10?
Yeah, 10 says that he took from the furnace the soot, and they stood before Pharaoh, and they threw it, and Moses threw the ashes to the heavens, and there were boils, blistering boils, that festered on man and on animals. And then it says our verse that the astrologers can't stand before Moses because the boils were on the astrologers and on the Egyptians. And then Pharaoh didn't send them away, and that's it. That's the end of the whole plague.
It seems like there's an awful lot of focus on the astrologers.
Right.
If the plague is on all of Egypt, you would think it would talk more about that. But that almost seems to be an afterthought.
Right. And your observation is very good. Why do we care that it's on Egypt? This verse 11 is focusing on the astrologers' inability to stand before Moses, so why should that be affected at all by the rest of the Egyptians having blisters? I mean, if I get a paper cut, it has no effect on you being able to hold a pen in your fingers.
Right.
So it would force you to say something different, right? And keep in mind also, the astrologers were infamous for trying to duplicate what Moses did. But if you're careful and you look at the verses, for example, by frogs, it says that, for the staff, they threw the staff down. But their staves were swallowed by the staff of Aaron. And they brought up, it says Moses and Aaron, they brought up the frogs. And it says, that Aaron, this is in Exodus 8:2, Aaron had stretched out his staff on the waters of Egypt, and there came up the frogs, and they covered the land of Egypt. But then it says the astrologers also did so with their sleight of hand, and they brought up frogs on the land of Egypt. But it says by Aaron that they covered the land of Egypt. Whereas it says by the Egyptians that they just came up onto the land. And you know, Sadia Gaon states that the way they did that was just by throwing chemicals into the Nile that the frogs are allergic to. So that's where they came out. They had no power. But here, and by the lice, it says that they tried to mimic the lice, which is right after frogs, but they said to Pharaoh, we couldn't do this. This is the finger of God. And then when it came to boils, they couldn't do it. You see clearly. So they were infamous for trying to mitigate the severity or the divine nature of the plagues that Moses and Aaron were instrumental in delivering to the land of Egypt. So they, of course, they were trying to belittle the nature of their miracles. Okay, so that seems to be what their role is. Now, if we take a look at this again, maybe, you know, we can think a little more into it.
So, does it seem that we have a build-up here where, bit by bit, you know, at the beginning, it says, in the very first plague, the astrologers were able to mimic what they could do. Are we seeing, essentially, bit by bit, and this is perhaps the culmination, that the astrologers are able to do less and less? And we know they're doing it through sleight of hand all the way along, but that finally when they get to the boils, they're not even able to stand up before Moses, that is, challenge him or make any claim that they can do anything like that against him because this plague is so severe.
Right. It could be that there is a progression, and this is really the culmination. Now, let's go back to your observation. When you said that, what is the role at all that this plague should be? You know, this plague plays on the other Egyptians. If all this verse is talking about is the inability for the astrologers to stand before Moses, so why is it brought in at all? But evidently, it must play some role. God put that in this verse, right? So what would be the first step we would have to say? Again, a paper cut on my fingers is not going to prevent you from holding a pen in your hand, right?
Right. So would we want to ask, what is the purpose of mentioning all of Egypt in this particular verse?
Right. If the inability, if it's talking about the posture of the astrologers, of what relevance at all is their posture, their ability to stand? What relevance is the fact that the boils are also on the other Egyptians? I mean, is there any relevance at all? If we're talking about physical posture.
Wouldn't it be that the astrologers are no different than any of the other people in Egypt where, you know, they had sort of set themselves apart before, like they were able to do all of these miraculous things, and
right,
yet they're no different?
Okay, that's true. I mean, there's an equation over here. There's an equation. Now, what does that have to do with their ability to stand physically in front of Moses? Why would it matter?
Measure up at all.
What's that?
They don't measure up at all. They aren't even on the same, in the same league.
Well, that wouldn't prevent them from having a certain, you know, physical posture. And what you have to say is that the effects of the boils on the rest of Egypt play no role at all in terms of the physical posture of the astrologers. So it can't mean, you have to conclude that it cannot mean when it says they couldn't stand before Moses because other Egyptians also had boils, it can't be talking about a physical description of standing. Because if it was, then all you have to say is that they couldn't stand. Why do you have to tell me they couldn't stand before Moses? That's another proof. That's not talking about a physical standing over here. You see?
Yeah.
Is it talking then about the astrologer's position in the eyes of all of Egypt?
Well, since I couldn't stand... Yeah, go ahead.
In other words, you got kind of these two main powers now in Egypt in front of the people. You've got Moses, and then you've got Pharaoh's whole regime, you know, which of which the astrologers were the people kind of, with the, from their standpoint, the power to go against Moses. And is this telling us that they're no longer able to appear credible in the eyes of the people against Moses because of the boils that are on all of Egypt?
Okay, right. I would say that's definitely the approach, because standing in front means to appear also. It doesn't just mean physically standing. That we already discounted. We've shown, I think, conclusively, that it does not mean standing physically. Because if it means that they cannot stand physically in front of Moses because of the boils, you wouldn't have to tell me that they couldn't stand before Moses. You would just say that they could not stand. And also, it would be irrelevant that all of Egypt also had boils. So we're only talking about whether these astrologers can stand. So we're concluding that it doesn't mean standing physically. It means that they couldn't come to appear before Moses. Okay, so now it's not in terms of the physical, but it's in terms of their dignity. If we have to boil it down to a word over here, it's talking about the dignity, or like you're saying, that Cal said very well before, that it equaled the playing field. It leveled the playing field. The fact that now that the verse is telling us that they had boils and so did all of Egypt. Now they couldn't stand before Moses because they had boils in all of Egypt. So what Cal was saying was that they were no different. And like you're saying now, is that their credibility is completely shot. Right?
Right.
So this is what it means they couldn't stand before Moses. That's why it says they couldn't stand before Moses, because it's not a matter of just describing that they couldn't stand up. I mean, what do we care if they can't stand? So let them sit. But the fact that it says they couldn't stand before Moses means that their dignity, they couldn't hold a candle anymore. And it was an embarrassment to them, who were supposed to be able to duplicate all these things, and you see that they tried to do that, and now they had no face anymore. That's what this verse is telling you.
I see that.
Isn't it beautiful? I mean, just a simple reading of the verse, it just uncovers a beautiful idea that you just would not see otherwise.
Well, that is really clear.
Yeah. But now, that's just the beginning.
But yeah. Wait, there's more.
But wait. Order now. Okay, now the question comes up like this. I was thinking afterwards that you see that the ability of the Egyptians did not match. They even admitted by lies that we can't do it. It's the hand of God. So it seems that the credibility factor was already addressed a few plagues ago. And after lice, they couldn't duplicate the wild animals or the animal plagues. And then right after the animal plagues comes this one, the boils. So it would seem to be superfluous. Didn't this already get addressed? They admitted, it's the finger of God. The verse says openly, they tried to duplicate lice, they couldn't do it. So haven't they already been shown to be incredulous? You see the question?
Oh boy, I do. That's a great question. Alright.
So that means they were already discounted in terms of having, I mean, like what God says later on, that there is none like God in all the land. So that seems to be, that was addressed already. The fact that God is the exclusive controller of the natural laws and not the astrologers. So now what are you doing over here by the astrologers? But the answer, again, is in this verse. There was something that was not addressed yet. Evidently, it had to be. That's why there was a separate plague devoted just for for addressing the astrologers.
Rabbi, did all the other plagues, and if I go back to lice and so forth, did that one personally affect the astrologers? Or are we into a spot here where kind of the last straw was that they had, not only could they not duplicate it, but they were, if you will, victims of it in a very clear and publicly viewable way?
Are you asking whether they were affected by the lice or not?
Yeah.
It seems to be the verses say that all of Egypt, right? Exodus 8:13 says that there was lice on all the land of Egypt.
Okay, but let's look at lice for a minute. I mean, that's an external thing, crawls around, it's going to make you itchy. Okay, that's one thing. But if they went to stand up before the people or Moses or make a public appearance, they still look the same. But now, with the boils, you know, that second clause says, because there were boils on the astrologers, this is like public display on them physically, so that when anyone looked, they could see, not only couldn't you guys apparently duplicate this, you know, it's affecting you directly, and we can see those boils.
Right.
So your credibility is affected or destroyed, if you will, in a deeper way. Because it's not just you can't duplicate what Moses did, it's that you're now just like the rest of us.
Right. Exactly. So now let's take it a step further. Let's no pun intended, but let's boil it down to the bottom line here. The idea that was already addressed is that God is the exclusive controller of the universe. So what is the new idea that Boyles addresses that was not yet addressed? And you're saying it.
That the astrologers have no control over that?
Well, that we already said. By saying that God is the exclusive ruler of the universe, so that would include the astrologers being on the other side of the fence, not being in control.
Okay.
Meaning, if when we compare God and all other men, right? Not other men. We compare God and we compare men. So God is the exclusive controller. Man is not. So that's one thing that the original plagues took care of, and they admitted to it. But something else still had to be addressed.
Is it the clearly showing that the astrologers have no special standing before God, but that Moses does?
It shows that. So therefore, what is the nature of the what is the objective of Boyles then?
Publicly put the astrologers in their place.
Remember, that's too general, because we could say that's what was done with the previous plagues. They were put in their place because God's the exclusive ruler. There were two breakdowns of the astrologers. One was to show them that they do not compare it to God. What was the second one?
They have no influence?
Well, that they're just like all of the rest of Egypt?
Yes.
Like anybody else?
Yes, they're like anybody else. There's a breakdown that they are not like God, Then there's a breakdown that they are not superior to man. That's what it means in the verse. They couldn't stand before Moses. There's a comparison right in the beginning of the verse. It's not telling them they couldn't stand, so let them sit. I don't care about them physically standing, showing respect or whatever. They couldn't appear before Moses. God wanted to now show Egypt that although people would now start accepting, hopefully, that the God is the one who is the exclusive ruler of the natural world since he created it, that does not attack the issue of whether within the sphere of just mankind are there different levels. And this was a belief that the Egypt had, that the astrologers were superior. That's why they were in position. That's why there was a position. Power recognized this as being valid. So now you see a subtle thing that there was one plague was targeting just to show that amongst men, all people are the same. Right? You see, that's a difference in saying that God is the exclusive ruler of natural world. If you say that God rules the world, or perhaps there's different, no, there's man, there's animals, there's different levels of creations, for sure. That's not a problem. But it is a problem if you state that within man there are different capacities of existence. That was something which they still it was not addressed, and that was what the Shechin came to do. That's what focuses on the astrologers.
That makes sense.
It's amazing. You see the Chumash year after year, and then you just one week, you have to reading through it, and hey, that's interesting. Never noticed that before. And then one question leads to the next, and then you see that it ends up not just being a nice distinction, but then you realize that it's formed part of the plagues. That means it was essential in nature. Something was very vital here in terms of educating the Egyptians, removing false ideas. Now, like you said, it being on the body is undeniably then. If they just can't duplicate lice, so it's external to them. It still hasn't broken them down, it just hasn't brought them up to the level of God. But if they now are smitten with boils equal to the other Egyptians, and they can't get rid of the boils, it shows that they have no more capacity than any other human being. See, the previous two plagues also were interesting, that the wild animals and the death of the animals. And I think it was Rashi that says, and Joshua was just asking, is Paro also afflicted with boils? Yes, everybody was afflicted. So Rashi says that the wild animals, that the mixture included snakes and scorpions, and we normally think of it being like more beasts of the, like South African animals, like tigers and wild animals like that, bears or cougars, whatever, and lions. But Rashi says it could have been those too, but there were snakes. He says it was part of it. If you notice, if you've seen the headdress that the Paros wore in Egypt, so the snake was on the headdress. Evidently, that was a elevated or maybe even deified creature. Now, what happens when the very animals that you deify start attacking you?
seems like it would, well, they would probably interpret it as some kind of punishment.
Or that they weren't really favored, that their concept of them being favored by these gods is false.
Right.
It was hopefully to shake loose. It's interesting also that the plague itself was a mixture of animals. It wasn't just one species, which would seem to be targeting a sort of like a dilution of the strength or the how much they empowered any given species. That was just a whole mixture. There wasn't anything that was singled out, which is something that they did. They would single out certain beings and attribute power. You notice that they had certain things, like snake. The cat was a dominant thing. The falcon. A beetle. A beetle was also another thing.
Seems odd that they would have picked snakes in one sense, because snakes generally are considered to be dangerous and that they will, you know, attack you if you corner them.
Well, maybe that's what they were trying to do, is to gain the upper hand. And sometimes if you... the objective is to gain favor from the ones that threaten you the most. I mean, death was a big fear, so they went to the opposite extreme and made these pyramids, made these burial spots that gave them eternal life, and they brought all of their things with them. That was part of their ritual when they would bury them. They'd bury them with all their tools, their final grazing ground. So that which concerned them the most is what they preoccupied themselves with and tried to find favor. I mean, reality hit them to a certain extent. They couldn't deny the fact that the friend of yours died and you never saw him come back to Earth again. That's something which the conscious mind has to deal with.
It would be interesting to know if after that Pharaoh still looked to those people for guidance, or whether he got the point.
Yeah.
They had no power. Yeah, because we see that phenomenon sometimes. You hear about these groups that say the world's going to end, and they all gather in some small little place waiting for a certain date at a certain time, and then it passes. But then the leader says, well, it's been moved up, or, you know, somehow has an explanation. People don't necessarily, as I understand it, walk away, but they sort of keep hanging on to that leader.
Well, that's what the astrologers did. They always gave open-ended claims to Pyro. They never committed to something which could really be proven wrong. Like we talked about it. They said to Pyro that your seven, the dreams of the seven cows refers to seven daughters. And the seven skinny cows, meaning the seven daughters will become skinny, they'll die. So that's not something which Pyro can ever say. Even 50 years later, he could say, hey, whatever happened to that dream you said? So the astrologers will say, it will still happen. They didn't paint themselves into a corner.
Right.
Yeah, do the astrologers come back? It's a good question. Do they ever come reappear in the story here? I don't think so. I think you're making a good observation that it did its job. Well, let's see. I think they do come back and they say to Pyro, how long are you going to let Moses be a stumbling block? Let's see what it says then. sec. Let me see how it says here. Now, that was Avdei Paro. My mistake. The servants of Paro spoke up. This is in Exodus 10:7. It is by the case of the locusts. And it says, yeah, first he tells them, if you don't send the people, so then I'm going to bring the locusts to your boundaries, and it'll cover the land, and you will not be able to see the land surface because of the quantity of locusts, and they will eat all the remainder that was left over from the hail that smashed all the crops, and they'll eat all the trees, and they'll fill your houses and your servants' houses and all of Egypt that your forefathers never saw, from the day that the land until from the day that you were on this land until today. So they turned and they left Paro, and then the servants of Paro said, how long will you let this one be a stumbling block? Meaning, how long are you going to let Moses ruin us? Send the men away that they can serve the God. Do you not know that Egypt is already destroyed? So it was not the Chartumim, it was not the astrologers. They did not speak up. So it could be very well, like you're saying, that they lost face so much with the boils that they couldn't even be the ones to go to Paro anymore. Now it was the servants of Paro that said, listen, let's face the facts over here. We're getting destroyed. There's an interesting observation of Thor also regarding this concept of that the locusts, actually the hail. It says about the locusts also that it was incomparable from the day that they were, you know, since the days that they were on the land of Egypt. But the hail, it says an interesting thing. It says, let's see. Says two things. When God is talking about bringing the hail, so this is in Exodus 9, verse 18. And so Moses is telling Paro that God is going to cause it, but he's actually delivering God's speech. So he's speaking what God told him to say. Although it seems that sometimes he says things more, which he's allowed to do, of course. But he says that if you still refuse to send away my people, I'm going to cause it to rain down the hail, very heavy, that there was never like it in Egypt from the day that it was established, meaning the nation, right? The geographical boundaries until today. So that's talking about the prediction. When it finally comes, it says in 9:24, and then the hail came, fire mixed inside of the hail, tremendously heavy, very severe, that there was none like it in the land of Egypt from the time that they were formed as a people. First, it says nothing will be like it'll be nothing comparable to anything since the land was established in terms of geographical boundaries, and then it says when it finally came, it was nothing like it since Egypt became a people. You see the two things there. There's two things. There's the nation itself, the land, and then there's the people. So what is the message over here? Why does God, in the Torah, have to tell us that the hail is going to... It's not just that they're getting tremendously heavy hail that's mixed with fire. I mean, that's an amazing thing. But it's something which was unmatched
from the time that the land was established as Egypt, and that was in terms of when it was being predicted, and then when it actually occurred. So then it describes, the Torah describes that it was unparalleled from the time that the Egyptian people were formed. Two things. You see the question?
Yeah. What verse again is that?
The verse about... it's 9:18 and 9:24. Those are the two verses. 9:18 describes it as incomparable from the time that the land was established, and 9:24 is in terms of is incomparable from the time that Egypt was a people.
So one is about Egypt, the physical, and one is about Egypt, the nation?
Yeah, the land versus the people.
The people, okay.
Cal, you see it?
Yeah, I do.
Right. Okay, Josh, do you see the question? Josh?
To emphasize that there is nothing special about the nation? In other words, I have God is saying I have control over that too? You all may think you're special, but, you know, since the beginning of your nation...
Okay, so why does he have to address that? So why is that an element that has to be considered over here or addressed?
Because these people, it seems, had the idea that they were sort of like the nation. I mean, weren't they the kind of at that time the center of the world and a huge and very powerful nation?
Okay.
So God is perhaps saying, you know, I surpass not only you as a people, but even, you know, back when your land was put together. Trying to demonstrate that he's over all of that.
But what's the need? Now Joshua is writing that it's attacking two things in which they thought they had power. Two things, land or the people. But what does it show you about how they were thinking? It's trying to expose a little bit about the mentality of not just the Egyptians, but human beings. What is it exposing to us about the mentality of people?
We get very focused and localized on our own stuff, and we think that the world revolves around us.
Good. And it expresses itself in two ways. See, even though they had a couple of plagues already, this was still a last line of defense that they still felt they would not be able to accept God. Because you have to keep in mind, the plagues were to completely strip them of any defenses that they had, and that they should fully accept God and not have any type of a fallback. But they did have two fallback positions over here. And like Josh is saying, again, a false sense of security, meaning the concept that, well, you know, we're a nation, we're a people, or we're unified by the land. It adds to the strength of a person's ego, but it's a national issue. There is a phenomenon in people that are on the micro level and then the macro level. So this is talking about on the macro level, people will find strength in numbers. Psychologically, they'll feel that we're all together. We are a people. We have there's a reality to us. There's a certain invincibility. And that stems from two areas, because of the very land that you live on. The person identifies with that very much. He conquers it, he lives there, he's used to it. But then there's also all the peers, all the
the insecurity that a man has, that a woman has in life, which is removed when they share themselves with others, when they join and they bond in a communal setting. This now gives them a false sense of security in their beliefs. And because of that, that had to be undermined as well. God had to address that as well if he was really going to, you know, tear through all the curtains of defense that the Egyptians had. So when he says that the hail is going to be something which is unparalleled before you were a nation on the land and before you were a people, the concept here is one word, before you were around. And that can be very weighty on a person. I'll give you an example. When Ahasuerus was having his big party, over 100 countries, and the party for what, 180 days, and he gave them wine. Each person he gave them wine that was older than they were. A guy was 60, he gave him a wine that was 70 years old. A guy was 30, he gave him a wine that was 40 years old, whatever it was. What was the concept over there? See, I believe a leader is always in a very precarious situation. He has to know who is trying to knife him in the back and who his real supporters are. And of course, he wants everybody to be his supporters, but there also has to be a certain amount of control. He is, of course, the leader. So he did a very smart balancing act. He would placate all of his subjects, all his viceroys, his vice presidents, his foreign ministers, by giving them wine. He treated them. He treated them nicely. But he also gave them wine that was older than they are. That sends a very subtle message that there was a certain point in time where you did not exist. It reminds the person of his transient state, of his feebleness, that he didn't create himself, that he was not around at a certain point in time. And this could be a very wise move on Ahasuerus if that was the intent. I don't know for sure if that was, but I thought about why it was a necessity to give him wine that was older than they were. So that could humble a person. So perhaps that's the same thing over here, that God is now telling them that there's going to be events with this hail that preceded you as a nation and preceded you as people, meaning nation on the land or as a people. And what that does is it reminds a person, hey, you know, we weren't always here. There was a point where we weren't around. And that reality is what God wanted to show them, that this can happen again. You can be devastated and destroyed now, and it can return to that state where you are not here anymore. And the way you drive that home is reminding a person that there was a point where you weren't here. Even the Pirkei Avos says that if a person wants to control himself from sinning, so you should ponder three things. One of them is where he came from, a putrid drop of semen. The second one is where is he going to? A grave filled of maggots. In both of those cases, he's no longer the healthy, standing upright person that he is right now. There was a time where he didn't exist yet, and there's going to be a time again where he doesn't exist. So you see that there's a number of cases which point to the fact that if we can remind a person that there was a point in time where you were not around, that is a very humbling fact, and that can help strip the person's ego away. I believe that's what God was addressing here, and that's why the verses describe that, both in terms of the national identity that's based on two factors, the one common land and all the people that they live with, the nation as a whole. Interesting, huh?
Yes, very interesting.
You know, the plagues are a lot more than meets the eye. But it's there, the information is there in the verses. We just have to be careful enough to ask, what's the, and you know, the reason for this? So before there were nations, so you know, why is that here? Evidently there's a message over here. You could go further and ask, well, why was it hail? that had to deliver this and break down this national identity that they had? Well, I think it had to be something that always is in existence, which meaning weather. Because the point over here is that something was deviating, meaning that is in existence regularly, but now is going to be in a way that's unparalleled even before you were a nation. So the mixture of animals never happened, and blood, and frogs, all these different things. So you can't say that I'm now going to bring frogs that are different than all, you know, all the years you were around. Well, there never was an incident before frogs. There never was an incident of darkness. But weather, that's something which always existed. So now God took something which was always in existence and then showed now there's going to be a tremendous deviation. So I believe that's why, you know, just to answer maybe why this had to occur in the weather, because that was something which they always had. It gives you a whole different angle on the plagues. And again, it's God that's orchestrating this. So there has to be a tremendous amount going on. But even without the Egyptians even articulating this, or even they didn't have the Chumash in front of them, but the effects of this were there. The Torah is just telling us now, in a very concrete form, the exact list of all the different aspects of the plagues. But this doesn't mean that they didn't feel it, since they didn't have the book to study. No, they were shaken. Then they realized this never happened before. So one fell swoop, a lot of defenses were broken. But for us to appreciate, since we did not perceive the actual events, so we do not benefit from the emotional impact that it had, like the Egyptians did. So how do we gain the insight into what the different facets of the plagues were? By the psukim, the verses, God articulating all these different angles. Subtle hints in the verses give it to us. But that's really something which, you know, we're very fortunate to have somebody like Rabbi Chait, who trained so many of us and learned under him for so long, and he was so careful in exposing this type of an approach, meaning the approach, the real approach to see how the Torah is written. I mean, you can have people get up and speak about how freedom is important, and you can have a half an hour sermon about freedom, which, of course, everybody knows freedom is important. But that's not really reflecting the wisdom, the God's wisdom, that's encased in every single verse. But when you study it this way, and you just, like Rabbi Chait says, you let the words speak to you, now you start developing a sensitivity, and you start seeing the tremendous wisdom that the Torah has. You don't have to look for these Bible code approaches, or these numerology, or whatever. The Torah is written, it's the words. That's what King Solomon says. If you really want wisdom, so then you'll dig for it like silver and look for it like a buried treasure. Because Hashem gives forth wisdom, from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. It's one verse. I think it's 2:6. Proverbs 2:6, I think. And in one verse over there, King Solomon says it's two things. If you want knowledge, you have to dig for it. But why? Why do you have to dig for it? Two things. One is because God is the one that's giving forth the wisdom. The source of the wisdom is the creator of the universe. So that's why, if you dig for it, it'll be there, because this is the source. God is the source. But the second reason is because from his lips comes knowledge and understanding. What does it mean, God's lips? He has no lips. But lips refers to the articulated words in the Torah. What was spoken. Meaning the very verses, and that's what we're concentrating on today. Studying the verses and seeing the depth, the articulation and the nuances, the verbalized words, right? The ideas that have been encased in the structure of these precious sentences that we have in the Torah. So if we study that, then we'll start to arrive in great ideas. So you see that King Solomon himself alluded to that. You have to understand, number one, that the source is God. He's the source of all wisdom. So that means there's an endless sea of knowledge here. But you can derive it because, number two, the words were articulated from God to Moses. So there's a tremendous science just in reading the verses. All right. Any questions or comments?
Makes sense, Rabbi. Thank you.
Okay. That's very good.
All right. All right, so I guess that pretty much covers what I wanted to do today. And I guess we'll pick up next week. Yeah, we're on for next week, right?
Yep, we'll look forward to it.
Okay, great. Well, both of you have a good week. Enjoy. And Joshua and Y and JHS, good week to everybody, all right? And we'll pick up again next week, 11:15, New York time.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay, be well.
You too.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.